Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the webinar today on Fulbright opportunities in the Western Hemisphere. Right now, we'd like to conduct a little sound check. So if you can hear my voice and see my screen, please find the chat function in your webinar panel and just chat in if you can hear me and see the screen. Great. And it looks like folks can hear us and see us. So it's about 2 o'clock right now. We'll give a few more, we'll give a minute or two more for folks to join us. What we've been trying to do, folks are already chatting in questions, so we're trying to answer questions via chat, but we will have a dedicated Q&A for this session, so feel free to chat in your questions now, and we'll go through questions as they're received. If we don't get to your questions today, there'll be an opportunity to stay in touch with us and you know, ask us questions that either you didn't think of or you know, we didn't get to, but we will try to make our best effort to answer all questions today. And for folks whose questions we don't get to on this webinar, we will, if you chat them in, we'll email you directly. We'll just get started in a few more minutes. And again, thanks everyone for joining us on this webinar about opportunities with the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program in the Western Hemisphere. All right, everyone, we're going to get started with the webinar. My name is Peter Rauschy. I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist with the Institute of International Education based here in New York City, and I'm joined by my colleague.
Hi, I'm Grant Stream Gonzalez, outreach and recruitment analyst based in the Washington, D.C. office.
Grant and I focus on opportunities in the Western Hemisphere, from everything from Canada to Chile and everything in between, and we're delighted to have folks join us today to learn about the region and see what's new in our catalog and also learn about the Fulbright program. So the Fulbright program was established in 1946 by then junior Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas. The inspiration behind the Fulbright program is really to strengthen the relationships between people of the United States and citizens of the rest of the world, really focusing on mutual understanding. This is a really important aspect of the historical considerations of the Fulbright program, and it resonates in what makes a successful application today. So as a Fulbrighter, we're supporting you for opportunities in teaching and research and a number of different activities throughout all disciplines, all academic disciplines, but really the foundation of that is that ambassadorial aspect, that person-to-person diplomacy. It's a wonderful thing to support folks doing great educational projects, but we really want our Fulbrighters to embody the spirit of that ambassadorial aspect, and that's really what the Fulbright program is all about. The Fulbright program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs and is administered by the Institute of International Education's Council for the International Exchange of Scholars. As a Fulbrighter, you are in great company. There have been 380,000 grants awarded since the inception of the program. We send about 800 U.S. scholars abroad annually, and there are about 160 different participant countries across the umbrella of Fulbright programs. Specifically for the Fulbright Scholar Program, there are about 125 countries that participate, but as we all know, the Fulbright Program has many different aspects, including the student program, and other aspects of the program as well. As Fulbrighters, though, again, as I mentioned, you're in great company, heads of state, Nobel laureates, Pulitzer Prize recipients, MacArthur Fellows, recipients of the Presidential Medal of Freedom have all been among the Fulbright alumni. So really, Fulbright is part of your professional, academic, and personal development, and we're excited to present to you on the program, specifically focusing on the Western Hemisphere. So let's talk about the U.S. Fulbright Scholar Program and sort of set parameters on what we're going to talk about today. So we're primarily focusing on the core Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program today. And these are awards that support teaching and research, teaching, just research, or a combination of teaching and research. Generally, awards are anywhere from 3 to 12 months, and we have programs active, as I mentioned, in about 125 different countries. These awards are they're appropriate for faculty, for administrators, but also for professionals outside of academia. Across the breadth of the catalog, we have awards that are open to all disciplines. There is, you know, maybe not every single award will encompass all disciplines, but aggregately we can encompass all disciplines throughout the catalog of our awards. you really do have to dig deep into the catalog of awards to find a specific award and understand the parameters of the award to put forth a strong application. And today we'll be going through the awards in the Western Hemisphere, but I'll also try to demonstrate the catalog of awards as well. We have an application deadline for these awards as of August 1st. So our catalog is live now, our application is live now, and our deadline is August 1st. And as a Fulbrighter on the U.S. Scholar Program, you'd be hosted in the host country in a variety of institutions. Depending on the award, you could be hosted at a university, an NGO, a research organization, or other type of organization. For the U.S. Scholar Program, in general, you have to be a U.S. citizen. Some awards are open to dual citizens, some aren't. We can discuss the parameters of the awards a little bit in depth later, but in general, for the U.S. Scholar Program, you do have to be a U.S. citizen. Then, depending on the award, there may be requirements for things along the lines of your professional profile, whether or not you have a doctoral or terminal degree in your field. However, do note that many awards are open to applicants that have a sort of professional degree or a master's degree in their field and combined with academic experience. It's really about looking at the parameters of particular awards and understanding how you fit into that award, both in terms of your project and your profile. If you're applying for a teaching award, there generally are requirements for having specific teaching experience, a number of years, or things of that nature, and that would be detailed in the award description. Also, there are new policies on previous Fulbright grants. So there used to be a cap on the number of Fulbright Scholar grants you could receive in your lifetime. That has been removed. You can receive as many Fulbright Scholar grants as you are competitive to apply for. However, you do have to wait 2 years between the end of your previous Fulbright grant before you can apply for another grant. So let's look into the Western Hemisphere. Let's dive deep into the Western Hemisphere. In the region, there are 27 countries participating in the program, representing everything from Canada to Chile. There are 53 award offerings in the region and 195 grants available, meaning that there can be multiple grant opportunities for one award. Let's start north and sort of work our way south. Let's start in Canada. There are 11 awards available in Canada, and there's a regional award for Canada and Mexico. Canada features an all-disciplines award, which is open to all disciplines. And that award feature can support a variety of disciplines, really focused on, you know, what are your interests. It's sort of you design your own project award. We also have a postdoctoral research award in Canada that is open to candidates who have recently received a doctoral degree. So those are two awards in Canada that are sort of open-ended. The majority of the awards in Canada are what we refer to as research chair awards. The chair awards are targeted, specialized opportunities for scholars to be part of a host faculty. The Fulbright Canada chairs will conduct their own research, work collaboratively with new colleagues, engage with students, really becoming involved in the local community. You're hosted at a particular university in Canada for these chair awards, and you know they support a range of activities aggregately. This is a new award, the Distinguished Research Chairs Award at Carleton University. So this award is at Carleton University, and there are four different grants available to that. There's a chair in arts and social sciences in Canada and North America. There's a distinguished chair in entrepreneurship, a chair in environmental science, and a chair in public affairs in North America. So these are four opportunities with Carleton University. Then we have a research chair award in arts, humanities, and culture, where there are several opportunities to affiliate with various institutions throughout Canada in topics including society and culture, American literature, globalization and cultural studies, arts and humanities, and other topics. Moving on, we have a business and economics research chair in Canada where you're able to affiliate with one of four institutions in Canada focusing on topics within business economics, including marketing, strategy, environmental economics, public economics, environment and economy, and other different topics. Then we have awards in Canada that focus on the Research Chair Award in Science and Technology. That award features the opportunity to affiliate with one of four institutions in Canada. Brain language and music focus is available for McGill University. We have a chair in education at the University of Alberta. There's a chair in STEM education at the University of Calgary, and a chair in science, technology, engineering, or math at the University of Manitoba. Then as we move through the other chairs in Canada, we have research chairs in environmental studies, which is an opportunity to affiliate with one of a variety of Canadian institutions in different topics within environmental studies. Similarly, we have a research chair in health and food security, which offers the possibility of affiliating with one of many institutions in Canada to focus on a variety of topics, including aging and social inclusion, healthy human environments, child, youth, and well-being, health analytics, and other opportunities. Moving on, we also have a research chair in Indigenous Studies in Canada where you can affiliate with one of four institutions in Canada where you can focus on topics including gender and sexuality, North American Aboriginal law, Inuit and environment change, Indigenization, Aboriginal engagement, and a variety of other topics as well. And we have the research chair in North American Studies in Canada, which offers the opportunity to affiliate with one of three institutions in Canada, focusing on topics including transnational studies, Canada-U.S. relations, North American integration, among other topics. Lastly, we have the research chairs in policy, law, and governance in Canada, which is the opportunity to affiliate with one of a variety of institutions in Canada, focusing on things, on topics including development studies, critical race theory and anti-discrimination law, human rights and social justice, among many others. We also have in Canada and Mexico the Fulbright Carlos Rico Award for North American Studies. This award is a unique award in the region where you are, it's a regional award, so you'd be going for part of your grant to Canada and part of your grant to Mexico. And that's a great segue into our next country of focus, Mexico. So in Mexico, there are seven awards available. We have the Postdoctoral Scholar Award, which is open to recent folks that have recently received their doctoral degree. We also have a unique award in Mexico, the Fulbright Scholar Border Program, which is open to folks who are affiliated with institutions along the Mexican border that want to be hosted by an institution in Mexico that's along the border. So again, you have to be affiliated with a U.S. institution in one of the U.S. states that border Mexico, and you have to want a host institution in Mexico in one of their border states. We also have the Science and Technology Award in Mexico. We have Social Sciences and Humanities in Mexico, and these awards have a particular areas of focus. And generally, as we saw with Canada, there are sort of open-ended awards where you're designing your own project and sort of fitting into a very open-ended parameter, but then there are very, very focused awards that are looking at either particular institutions or particular fields of study, particular disciplines within that institution. So when you're examining these awards, you want to make sure that what the areas of focus are. So going back to Mexico, we see a Science and Technology Award. You know, that's a very broad-based award, but it is focused on science and technology. So you want to make sure that the project that you propose fits into the parameters of that specific award. Moving on to Mexico, we have a Social Sciences and Humanities Award, which is sort of a mirror image of the Science and Technology Award, but focused on different areas of study. Then in Mexico, we have a Teaching English as a Foreign Language Award, which is really focused on the teaching of English as a foreign language. There are each award has its own parameters in terms of not only the types of profile of applicants, but also the kinds of projects that they support. So obviously this would be appropriate for folks in the language teaching arena. We also have a U.S. Studies Chair in Mexico where you're focusing on topics involving the U.S. from a wide variety of different lenses. And then we also have in Mexico, as I mentioned, as in Canada, the Carlos Rico Award for North American Studies. So this award is really focused on sending, segmenting the grant. Part of it is in Mexico and part of it is in Canada. Let's look into Brazil. That's our next country. So Brazil has five awards available. There's an All Disciplines Award in Brazil, which is really focused on, really open to all disciplines. There are 30 grants available for this award. So Brazil will fund 30 people for the All Disciplines Award, meaning that there are, you know, 30 opportunities for this award. And they're really looking at, you know, all varieties of disciplines. There is a preference in Brazil for awards outside of Sao Paulo and Rio, which are, you know, places where a lot of Americans tend to go in Brazil. So if you have an award that is outside of those two major cities, you know, that the award does express preference for that. And that's not to say that applications and projects focused in Sao Paulo and Rio will be denied, but, you know, with 30 grants available, Brazil really wants to use this award as an opportunity to move folks around into different areas, to really have a representation throughout Brazil for, under this award. There's also the postdoctoral award in natural sciences in Brazil. This award is open to recent recipients of doctoral degrees and really focused on a wide variety of natural sciences. Then rounding out what the other awards in Brazil, we have the Distinguished Chair in International Relations at the University of Sao Paulo. So here we have the University of Sao Paulo. It's a very focused award, and they really want folks in the broad field of international relations, and you would be affiliated with USP and focusing on a variety of, you know, whatever topic within international relations. We see two other awards in Brazil that are specialized. So we have the FACEP Distinguished Chair in STEM and Computer Sciences in Brazil, where you'd be affiliating in the state of Pernambuco in Brazil, focused on a variety of science and tech fields. Then similarly, we have the Distinguished Chair in Public Policy at the Escola de Inovação e Políticas Públicas in Brazil at the Fundação João Nabuco. So here, again, it's a very focused award at a particular institution in Brazil. And we can start to see the variety of awards that are available. There are some awards, like All Disciplines Awards, that are very open-ended, where you're sort of designing your project and finding, you know, you're open to a variety of institutions, all the way to very specific awards where there's a particular discipline of focus or a particular institution that the award hopes to focus on. Let's look at some other countries in the region. So we have Colombia and the Southern Cone. So let's look in Argentina. We have a Science and Technology Award. We also have a Social Sciences and Humanities Award. So the Science and Tech Award and the Social Sciences and Humanities Award, these focus on different fields of study. So if, depending on what side of discipline you're more focused on, you would look into either the Science and Tech or the Social Sciences and Humanities Award. Let's move down to the other side of the Southern Cone in Chile. So there are three awards in Chile. There's an Astronomy and Antarctic Studies Award, which is focused on, you know, broadly these topics and is appropriate for folks who are recent recipients of doctoral degrees. This is for a postdoc early career profile for this award. There's also a more general science and tech award in Chile, and then a social sciences, humanities, and education award in Chile. So again, these awards are open to broadly projects focused in these different fields. In Paraguay, there is an all disciplines award. So that is really open-ended. You can propose a project that fits into the parameters of the award, but they're really designed to be open-ended. In Uruguay, there's also an All Disciplines Award, but then there's an Agriculture Award, where you would be hosted by INEA, the Institute for Agricultural Research in Uruguay, and you would be focused either on a project in agriculture or in environmental sciences. Similarly, in Colombia, we have the All Disciplines Award, which is sort of open-ended award where you're designing a project in with sort of very broad parameters. But we also have the Universidad Nacional de Colombia Distinguished Chair in Biodiversity and Sustainable Development, which is really a focused award on those fields at the university, the National University of Colombia. We'll see throughout the Western Hemisphere that there are a lot of what we refer to as all disciplines awards. We have them. I'm going to read this whole list just so that they resonate with folks that are interested in the different countries. But we have an all discipline award in the Bahamas, in Barbados and Eastern Caribbean, in Belize, in Bolivia, Brazil, Canada, Colombia, Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Guyana, Haiti, Honduras, Jamaica, Nicaragua, Panama, Paraguay, Peru, Suriname, Trinidad and Tobago, and Uruguay. So there are 23 countries in the Western Hemisphere that have all disciplines awards. These support a variety of activities. Some support just teaching, just research, and a combination of teaching and research. Others may be restricted to teaching slash research or just teaching. You know, the parameters of these awards can vary country to country, but all disciplines awards tend to be a little bit more open-ended than the more focused awards. There also, even though they're all disciplines awards, there may be areas of focus within particular awards. So even though it's open to all disciplines, they may express a preference for whatever preference the country may have in terms of discipline. Generally, these awards are open to a host of different institutions in the country. And all disciplines awards are available in all regions throughout the Western Hemisphere, North America, Central America, the Caribbean, and South America. In general, throughout the Western Hemisphere, you'll see at least two common themes. There tend to be language requirements. Spanish, Portuguese, French or Haitian Creole, or Dutch may be required depending on the award, and we'll unpack the level required for these specific awards in the award description. There can be some interesting aspects to this. So in many cases, you are submitting a language proficiency report, which is a two-phase report that's embedded in our application. There's generally a self-proficiency component to that, and then an external evaluation where you're sending the report through our application to a designated contact who can evaluate your language ability. Generally, this is a professor of that language, the head of a language department, really anyone that's qualified to teach that language as a second language. But the language requirements will vary by country and award. So some require intermediate Spanish, advanced Spanish. Others are more neutral. Spanish will help but not required. That Uruguay Agriculture Award, in the past they've offered translators for folks that didn't speak Spanish, and the folks at INEA in Uruguay, they felt that their faculty spoke enough English to accommodate folks that don't have Spanish. So again, the language requirements will vary widely, but generally in the Western Hemisphere you want to look out for language requirements. There's also a special feature in the Western Hemisphere that we offer a regional travel award. So during your grant period, if you're a scholar in the Western Hemisphere, you can apply for a short-term regional travel grant for eligible Western Hemisphere countries. The regional travel program really covers travel to and from the destination. Sometimes lodging may be offered by the host institution. It's really designed for short-term travel. So if you have a three-month grant, you know, you wouldn't be spending a month away from that country in another West Ham country, maybe a week or so to attend a conference or a seminar. And this award is applied to when you are in your grant. So this is something that once you've been given the funding, then you apply. You wouldn't apply for this ahead of time. So at this point, I want to focus on just making Fulbright work for you. There's a lot of information. There are almost 470 different awards throughout the globe. So there's a lot of ways to approach the Fulbright, and sometimes we're at different stages in our career or at different phases in considering an application. What I want to you all to take away is that there are ways for Fulbright to work for you that you may not have considered. So flex options are one of those ways. If you're not up for a sabbatical, or if your schedule is really sort of not allowing you to take a full semester or academic year away, you may want to consider a flex option. So flex options are available in 25 Western Hemisphere countries, and the flex option allows multiple visits for generally segmenting your grant for chunks of time over 2 years, depending on the country, depending on the particular parameters of the specific grant. You may be able to say take a six-month grant and do 3 2-month trips as a flex grant. So that may be an option for you. Also, depending on your profile, there are awards focused for folks all throughout their careers, from postdoc to early career all the way up to distinguished chair. And certainly there are awards available to folks that are even outside of academia that may have professional backgrounds outside of academia. We have, in terms of the Western Hemisphere, really the only global award that we have, the award that focuses on more than one country, is the Canada-Mexico Award, the Carlos Rico Award, where you would be going to Canada for one part of your grant and Mexico for the other. There is the Global Scholar Award, which is, as the name implies, a global-oriented award where folks go to two or three countries in at least two world regions. So you wouldn't be able to do a Global Scholar Award and stay in the Western Hemisphere. You would have to be, it would have to be in one Western Hemisphere country and a country outside of the region. Aggregately throughout the catalog, home university affiliation is not required. So some awards may require it. Others are open to folks outside of academia that are professors emeritus, that are professionals outside, again, outside of academia. There are a variety of awards available that really accommodate a huge range of potential applicants. And again, so the whole point of this slide is so that you think about ways that a Fulbright grant might work for you in ways that maybe you haven't considered before.
Hey, thanks so much for that, Peter. I'm just going to hop in here at the end, and we do want to take as much time as possible to give you an opportunity to ask questions and for us to answer those live, but we wanted to give you some broader perspective on the program and the application components itself. First of all, the Fulbright program website, absolutely encourage you to get on there, check that out, and see some of the various resources we have available right there, especially the catalog of awards if you haven't already done so. Take some time, as Peter mentioned. There's a wide range of awards, and we want to make sure you find that one that's right for you, and the best way to do that is by going through our catalog of awards. Moving on down, the application itself is going to be online, as well as application instructions, application guidelines, and some sample projects for you so you can get a sense of what we're looking for in the project statement and application. This webinar, as well as all the webinars that we'll do throughout the season, will be posted onto our website. We're going to record these and have that information available to you. So while we absolutely hope you apply for a Western Hemisphere country, if there's another world region that you're interested in, they'll be focusing on that as well as application components, very specific webinars throughout the year. And if you're looking for a little bit more in terms of an inspiration for your project to hear more story-based information, our Fulbright Scholar blog has some wonderful resources there, some stories about what scholars are doing on grant. And of course, if you haven't already done so, go ahead and sign up for my Fulbright so you can get live updates on programs that interest you. The application itself is going to be pretty straightforward application form, just biographical information that we're collecting from you there, who you are, where you've been, and where you're planning on going. A project statement is going to be between 3 and 5 pages, folks, which can be difficult to sum up a Fulbright project in that amount of space. But with the volume of applications we get, we are going to need you to keep it in that 3 to 5 pages range. The CV that we're going to ask from you is going to be 6 pages for most awards, for those core awards. But for Distinguished Chair Awards, you can go up to 8. If you do go over, folks, we are going to reach out to you and have you cut that down. So please do keep it to 6 to 8 pages. Your letters of reference are going to be 3 people who are familiar with your work, and your ability to conduct the project that you're proposing. If you are teaching or proposing teaching as part of your project, we'd love to see a letter of reference from either your dean, your supervisor, someone who can speak to your ability to teach. Other application components are going to vary by award. So if you are planning to teach in the country, we'd love to see some outlines or course syllabi that you have for courses that you've taught here in the U.S. or maybe abroad, but not necessarily things that you're going to be teaching on grant, but just to get a sense of your teaching style for those folks who are going to be reviewing your application. Similarly, an application component for a study research awards that's not necessary for teaching is a bibliography. So that's just a sum of the research on the project that you're going to conduct in your host country so that we get a sense of what's already been done. Language proficiency, Peter already spoke quite in detail about that, but of course just by a college-level language instructor if you are not a native speaker of that language. The letter of invitation itself, you'll want to look at the country summary page on this because the letter of invitation, depending on the award that you're applying for, it may be required, it may be preferred, it may be strongly preferred. And in many cases, it will help even if it is just preferred to have a letter of invitation. So we encourage you to make connections and collaborate unless there is an established institution which you'll be paired with based on the award. And if the letter of invitation is required, You can reach out to us and ask for further assistance. We may be able to assist with facilitating connections to a potential host institution. For arts, architecture, writing, and journalism, there is going to be a space for you to submit either portfolio samples of your work, but that is just for those fields, folks, the arts, architecture, the writing, and journalism. So if there is anything in there for a basic science award or some such, we will go ahead and take that out. So it's not extra space for you. The project statement is going to be where you're going to tell us what you're going to do on your grant. It's going to get into the specifics of your project, even so much so as a sort of a detailed timeline of how you're going to conduct your research, the methodologies you're going to use. But it's really important that you demonstrate why Fulbright and why the country that you're, the country, the institution, the organizations that you're selecting. Specificity is going to be very important as you're preparing your project statement. We want to know why it is you've chosen the country that you're going to, why it is that your project must be conducted there, and what interests you about the country itself. In terms of what we're looking for in that project statement further, impact is something that's really important to us, not just impact in your in the host community, the host institution, but what you're going to do when you come back to the U.S., how it's going to affect you, your career, the interactions you have with your students and your host institution. We're looking for lasting collaborations from these Fulbright projects. Because it is, again, about mutual understanding and about promoting that understanding, not only in countries abroad, but back here in the U.S. once you come back. Qualities we're looking for in Fulbright applicants is something that you can demonstrate in your project statement, how adaptable you are, how well you deal with these challenging situations, because if you've gone out of the country before, you know you're going to run into these challenging situations no matter where you go, and we want to make sure you're ready for that. Affiliations and letters of invitation. It's important to know that these are non-binding expressions of interest from your host country abroad. So while they should be interested in bringing you on board and we should be able to get that sense from your letter of invitation, it is not a contract, folks. It should come from the person that you're most closely collaborating with. That being said, on some occasions it does have to come from a higher level individual from that institution. If that's the case, that is okay, but we do need a letter of invitation on letterhead that says that they understand why you're coming, what you'd be doing, and get a sense of that they've understood the project that you're proposing to conduct in their host country. Some of these awards will have a host identified, as you can see. If that's the case, you'll want to get in touch with those folks or see what resources we have on our website, on the award description, in order to get in touch with the host institutions. But if a host hasn't been identified, there's lots of ways that you can go about finding one. It can be difficult to make connections abroad if you don't have them at the time, but you want to check in with your international office on campus if you have any Fulbright Fulbrighters on your campus who have returned from their Fulbright. They're a great resource to you. On our website, you can find the scholar directory, and you can find scholars who have gone to the country that you're most interested in and attempt to reach out to them to see if they have connections for you. As well as some of these award descriptions, if you get in there and you look at the details, we'll have suggested host institutions or resources for you to explore while you're looking for a potential host. So some of the things that we like to see in a competitive application, successful applications will absolutely address the Fulbright mission. Again, that goal, which we say in all these presentations as many times as we can, of promoting mutual understanding through exchange. So that will absolutely be present in a competitive application. We encourage you to think about that as you're preparing your application. Again, specificity. You can only apply to one grant, folks. So it's important that you're very specific as to why you're applying to the country that you're proposing. Your professional expertise and skills should align with the project that you're proposing. It should be in the field and the and aligned with the background you have both professionally and academically. So be sure to choose the award that's right for you, as we've mentioned a number of times here. If you are in the humanities, the STEM and science award might not be right for you, but in all disciplines, maybe the way you want to go. Cultural diplomacy is something that we'd love to see present in your application, your demonstrated ability to serve as a citizen diplomat. As a Fulbrighter, you will be considered a citizen diplomat for the United States Department of State. We want to make sure we're sending folk abroad who have a great sense of cultural diplomacy. And finally, again, impact is very important for us. We want to create lasting collaborations in the future between institutions and individuals at home and abroad. A brief overview of the program timeline. So we just launched the application, folks, and it's going to go ahead and be due in August. That's when we'll conduct our technical review. If there's anything wrong, if your CV is 9 pages when we've asked for 6, we will go ahead and reach out to you and ask you to trim that down a little bit. Anything else that's a little bit funny about your application, we'll get in touch and because we absolutely want those applications. And there's going to be a discipline review, so folks and professors, academics in your field will review it first for a discipline review of your application and give a not a recommendation or non-recommendation, but a review of your application for the peer review, which we're going to hold here in the U.S. By people who have gone to the world region that or country that you're applying to. So this is our peer reviewers are going to be Fulbrighters who have returned from their Fulbright and will review your application from a regional perspective, a country-specific perspective. Finally, we're going to notify applicants of whether or not they've been recommended by the peer review between November and January, and grantees will be notified of final approvals that will come from the host country between February and May. Grantee packets and final paperwork is going to be sent to you between May and June, folks. Finally, we'd love for you to stay connected with us. We did mention those resources that we have for you online. You can always reach out to us specifically, though, me and Peter, at westhem@iie.org. Again, please do check out our website and join that My Fulbright for Live updates. And one thing down there at the bottom, we have our social media pages. And those, more than just in terms of following social media, you're going to find some really excellent stories on our social media pages, some real great examples of what folks are doing on their Fulbright grants to give you a little bit of an idea of the sort of things that Fulbrighters do all over the world. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Peter, and I believe that we will go into some questions, folks.
Right. So let's actually, before we go into questions, one thing I want to do very quickly is introduce you to the catalog of awards for those of you that haven't seen it and show you how to get information from it. So if you'll bear with me just a second, I am going to load that up. But again, thanks everyone for participating in the webinars thus far, and we're going to get to your questions really, really shortly. But here, okay, great. So here we have the catalog of awards, and this is awards.cies.org, and there are many, many ways to conduct a search. The broad way to do so is by region, so we're focused on the Western Hemisphere, so why don't we do that? But you could also search by particular countries or by particular disciplines. So let's pull up what's available in the Western Hemisphere. There are 54 awards, the 53 that I've mentioned, and the Global Scholar Award. So let's just take the first one just to get a sense of what it looks like. Science and Technology in Argentina. Click here for more information. I will go and do that. So this award, we see 4 tabs open up when we click more information. Let's scroll down. We get a sense of what the scope of the award is. This award features either pure teaching, so teaching and nothing else, or a combination of teaching and research. You'll conduct seminars for undergraduates or graduate students, faculty, or both. There are up to 5 grants under this award, and for this, a PhD or other terminal degree is required. This is a 3-month grant length, and there are some parameters of when it can start. You can be at any accredited institution of higher education in Argentina. There's no flex option, and here are the disciplines of interest. So again, this award is focused on science and technology, and here are the disciplines of interest. These are very broad-based, so I would get a laugh from engineers when I say engineering is an interest for this award, because what does that actually mean? We're purposely broad because it can encompass any area of engineering when we say engineering. Under the award requirements, we see that a letter of invitation is required. But if you scroll down, we list a bunch of helpful links, including the Fulbright Commission in Argentina, the embassy in Buenos Aires, the Ministry of Education, a list of public universities, and a bunch of other links. So if you do, again, if you need to find a letter of invitation, you're not alone. There are resources for you. And then you can actually even see my name and the West Ham email address and my phone number. Feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions or if there's something that you're sort of unsure of. Also, let's look at language requirements. Professional working proficiency in Spanish is generally required, but English might be acceptable if indicated by the host in the letter of invitation. Non-native speakers of Spanish must submit a language proficiency report. So these are pretty clear parameters. If your Spanish isn't sort of at a working proficiency level, you can, if the host institution is okay with your level of Spanish, they need to put that in the letter of invitation, and you're generally fine whatever the language proficiency report comes back with. There are some nuances between what is professional working proficiency or what is intermediate. If you have questions about that, feel free to reach out to me and Grant directly at westham@iae.org. That's exactly what we're here for, is to help you read through these nuances. Then we have tabs that focus on the award benefits, so potential, what you could potentially, what could potentially be covered by the award. We don't finalize grant amounts until the grant is actually conferred, but this is generally a range of what could be covered. And then the fourth tab is a general country overview. So this is a way, again, to get some information about particular awards. And on our, when you pull out of this award, you can see all of our more enhanced search criteria. You can search by country. You can search by discipline type. And again, they're very broad-based, but that'll starting a broad-based search will help you narrow down as you go forward. You can search by activity. Is it an award that features teaching or research or teaching and research or professional project? You can search by grant length. Does it offer a flex grant, or how long is the grant? Do you want to only look at things that are, you know, 3 months or thereabouts? You can search by degree requirement, if a PhD is required or not. The category lets you see what kind of awards. So if you only want to see Distinguished Chair Awards in the Western Hemisphere, or, you know, open to all levels of scholar type awards, you're able to search for that. We also have searches by professional profile, so academics only, higher ed administrators, folks outside of academia, and you can even search for awards that, based on the requirement of an invitation letter, and you can see the range of things that we have here. Everything from a letter is required all the way up to a letter should not be sought, and everything in between. So the catalog of awards is incredibly useful. You know, we have lots of resources, but this is the most in-depth and robust one, awards.ceif.org. So really we want to get you familiar with the catalog and help you understand how you can use it as a tool to look at different information for, you know, the almost 470 different awards throughout the catalog, and certainly for this webinar, the 53 awards available in the Western Hemisphere. So let's pull up some questions. We have lots of time for questions, and we want to get to all of them. So give us just a second to organize ourselves, and let's look into our questions. Okay, great question about language recommendations. What if I'm no longer affiliated with an institution, I'm no longer in school, how do I get a language recommendation? Well, if you're at an institution, generally the head of a language department or a language professor for that language would be the most appropriate person to complete that. If you're not affiliated with an institution, is there a language professional that you know that can vouch for you, that can fill out the application? We're pretty open-ended about the requirements and super general. It just should be someone that's eligible to teach and evaluate folks in that language. How difficult is it to get a Fulbright scholarship if you're an emeritus faculty? We welcome faculty emeriti. Some awards may require affiliation with a particular institute or an institution in the United States, but many of them do not, and you'll find that information in the award description. But other than that, you know, we welcome a project from emeritus faculty, absolutely. I was a previous senior Fulbright scholar in Costa Rica in 1987. Does that impact a future application in any way? I can say no. But that's very general. What the broader question this leads into is does it help me or hurt me if I have experience in the country or the region? And that will depend widely on the award. If there is a preference one way or the other, it will say so. So it's something to pay attention to in the award description. You know, some awards express either they'd rather have folks that don't have experience in the region or in the country. Others are neutral about it. So it really, really doesn't matter. But if you get a Fulbright Scholar Award, you know, in 1987, it's probably not an issue. But you definitely want to look into the the award description. Okay, we're scrolling through a variety of questions.
Peter, on that last question, I have seen that the reviewers of applications like to see the impact of your previous Fulbright spoken to, if you have been on a previous Fulbright, just present in the application, what you got out of it and what you hope to get out of your next.
Do awards / programs in non-English speaking countries typically require native language proficiency? Generally, no. We're looking at, you know, advanced or intermediate for the majority of these countries, but we will spell that out in the award description. And if you have questions about what does advanced Spanish mean, you can absolutely reach out to us for a particular country. Sometimes, again, though, as we saw in that Argentine award that I pulled up, there was, you know, if your host institution is okay with whatever Spanish you have, they just need to put that in the letter of invitation. Similarly, in Brazil, generally, the host institution has to be okay with whatever level of Portuguese you have, and they put that in the invitation letter. How would you suggest framing a proposal involving three countries, for example, Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico? I absolutely would not do that because we don't have a framework for that. So Fulbright, for the most part, we are focused on one country. So you're applying for one country. There are about 11 awards throughout the entire catalog that feature global opportunities, so opportunities in more than one country, but there wouldn't be something that covers Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico. In the Western Hemisphere, we have the Carlos Rico Award, which features Canada and Mexico, but that's a very unique award. We have the Global Scholar Award that features the opportunity to go to two or three countries, but they must involve two different world regions. So you wouldn't be able to go to three countries in the Western Hemisphere on the Global Scholar Award. So we really don't have a capacity for three different countries in the West Hem. You are able, though, to, as I mentioned, apply for the travel grant to go to another West Hem country while you're in country. But that, again, is a very short-term travel opportunity. Let's see further. When you mentioned the applicants need to have a PhD or other terminal degree, can a terminal degree be a master's degree? Absolutely. So things like the arts, the MFA is the terminal degree. The MBA, the business administration degree, is the master's is a terminal degree. In law, the LLM or even the JD quite frequently are acceptable. So whatever you know your field better than a generalist might know, whatever the terminal degree in your field tends to be, you know, if you feel you fit into that parameter, then, you know, generally you're okay for those awards that require PhD or other terminal degree if everything else checks out. So you want to pay attention. Like, if you have an MFA and you're applying to a science-oriented award where an artist, wouldn't necessarily have the background to apply, that sort of maybe might not make sense, although it could, depending on the project you propose. But, you know, if you're applying to an all-disciplines award that requires a PhD and you're an artist and you have an MFA, for example, that's fine, generally. Let's see what other questions we have. And there are questions coming in. We want to keep them coming, so thank you for chatting these in. Can you work on several countries in one application? The answer is no. You do have to write an application for the particular award. And as I mentioned, the majority of the awards in the catalog focus on one country. If you're, for example, applying to the Carlos Rico Award and you're focused on Mexico and Canada, then absolutely. But if you're applying to, the majority of the awards in our catalog, you really want to focus on the specific country and the specific award that you're applying to. The one catch is that in our application, we actually give you the opportunity to list other countries and or awards if for whatever reason you're not considered or you're not successful for the award that you're applying to.
That's okay to list other countries and awards in that question box, but your application, your proposal, your letters of recommendation, your letter of invitation really should focus on the specific award that you're applying to. So the way when we ask you, are there other countries that you may want to be considered for, that's the only place where you would even give nods to that. I wouldn't write an unfocused project statement that could be done in Guatemala or Argentina or Canada or Suriname. You know, it has to be, it has to make sense. It has to resonate that this has to happen in Suriname, or this has to happen in Canada, or this has to happen in Chile. It shouldn't be, an unfocused project statement. So when we ask you, are there other awards you may want to be considered for, that you can input that, but it's really one question in the application. Don't spend any time on that beyond that one question. Okay. Are successful applications generally formally connected to a host country institution or faculty member or department? In other words, should our proposal be specifically connected to an institution and or person? That is the case for many, many awards. Not necessarily every single award, not necessarily every award parameter. So you want to make sure in the award description if there's language around the ability to affiliate with institutions that are not just universities. So in some cases you can affiliate with NGOs or think tanks or research institutions or museums or arts organizations, things of that nature. So this will vary greatly depending on the award. But if you are affiliating with a university, generally, yes, you are affiliating with a specific faculty member in a specific department. We would like the letter of invitation to come from that person, but we also recognize, as Grant mentioned, there's a variety of bureaucracy and policy in different systems of higher education, different countries. There may be limits on who can write a letter of invitation or what they can put in a letter of invitation. Generally, we're okay with that. So it's not an issue unless it's expressed in the award description. If you've been turned down by a country in the past, is it a mistake to apply to that country again? Absolutely not. Keep in mind that the Fulbright Scholar Program is incredibly competitive. There's a lot of attention and interest across the board, and in some cases, we have to turn down really brilliant projects just because of competition. But it's really all about perseverance. If there are genuine interests that you have in a particular country or a particular institution, we encourage you to stay connected and consider that again. And feel free to use the resources we give you, including our contact information. Schedule a call to chat with us. Let us walk you through what we think might be helpful in considering a particular award or give you some advice about that. We really want to encourage you to reach out to us. Especially if you've not been successful in the past, we encourage you to apply again. Let's see. I'm a PhD MFA creating a research art teaching project in South America. I'm interested in providing supplemental materials like prior artworks and writing. I wish to do both research and teaching as well as art. Is it worthwhile to reach out to a host institution for ideas? This is a really good question. I'll sort of rephrase this question. It's coming from someone with an arts background. Is it okay to reach out for the host institution for ideas? Absolutely. You definitely want to make sure that the host institution can accommodate the project that you propose. So it's absolutely key to the success of your project. Whether or not the award requires a letter of invitation is neither here nor there. If you're proposing something that is not something the country can accommodate or something that is a priority for the country, it's not as strong an application. You lose points on feasibility, on outcome, on scope. So it's really, you want to make sure that the country is in line, the institution is in line with what you hope to do. And then I guess the other part of the question is, can I submit supplemental materials? Someone in the arts, absolutely. We would look for a work sample if you're proposing a project in the arts. Okay, I was awarded a teaching grant
for Chile more than 10 years ago but couldn't travel due to a personal situation. For purposes of this year's applications, I'm considered a previous or new grantee. I wouldn't really worry too much about that situation. We're sorry that you weren't able to participate in the program previously, but it's really sort of, we're neutral about that. You wouldn't have, you wouldn't run into any waiting periods because the grant was over 10 years ago, whether or not you even went on the grant at all. I wouldn't really worry about that. How many classes do you teach in a teaching award? This will vary greatly depending on the award. In some cases, the teaching awards or awards that feature teaching will actually tell you the specific classes that you'll be teaching. So outside of Western Hemisphere, there's an award in Iceland where you are at the University of Reykjavik and teaching classes, specific classes in their information technology and safety division. So they actually tell you, you know, you're teaching like Internet Security 103 or something. But others are super open-ended. Both in terms of the specific classes that you'll be teaching and the course load. So really, it really will vary greatly depending on your award.
And Peter, if I can jump in on that, many of the awards will list the exact percentages of research versus teaching. So you want to take a look at that and reflect that in your project statement. It may say 60% research, 40% teaching, 50-50, and you want to make sure you're adhering to the country requirements.
Okay, we have made references to being currently affiliated with an institution. I'm recently retired from working in an office in my state. I've held academic appointments in the past. I'm not currently affiliated with an institution. Should I seek out a new affiliation prior to applying? Absolutely not. That's not required unless a specific award asks that you have that, but there are awards that absolutely support folks who are emeritus professors, folks from outside of academia, people that don't have a current affiliation. So you want to pay attention to the award parameters, but you do not have to produce an affiliation with a U.S. institution to apply to an award. Absolutely not. For the postdoc option, must you have had your PhD for less than 5 years from August 1st, 2018, or from the time your project would begin in 2019? I earned my PhD in December 2013. That's a good question. It will, in general, someone that earned their PhD in 2013, I would say apply for the postdoc award if there's like two options for either a, you know, one award that isn't sort of open to early career and another that is. I would for 2013 PhD, I would apply to the postdoc in general, but there may be specific information for the country. So, for example, in Brazil, there's the All Disciplines Award, and then there's the postdoc award in natural sciences. And someone who got their PhD in 2013, provided that you were in the natural sciences, I would feel that you would be a better fit just based on your profile for the postdoc in Brazil. But that's specific to Brazil. Other countries will have sort of different parameters. If they're not expressed in the award description or you're sort of unsure of some nuance with related to that or another aspect, definitely feel free to reach out to us. For Flex and Global Scholar Awards, how important are letters of invitation given that multiple countries are involved? Depending on the particular countries that you're applying to and the particular aspects of your Global Scholar Award, you may or may not need letters of invitation. We have a team focused on advising the Global Scholars specifically. So I would actually, if you're applying to the Global Scholar Award, I would actually reach out to that team because they are going to have insight on how to apply to that award. And, you know, what are some of the best parameters? The Global Scholar Award is a wonderful opportunity to go to more than one country, but it's a challenge in that, or you know, not a challenge, but you have to understand that, you know, you have to, when you're applying to one country, it has to make sense. It has to fit into, you know, what you are applying to for that particular country. For the Global Award, you have to do it for more than one country. So I'm actually going to chat in the email address for the Global Award advisement. And for those of you that are interested in the Global Award, you should be in touch with them directly, and they're going to give you the best advice. globalaward@iie.org, and I just chatted that in to everyone, so hopefully you all got that. I'm completing a master's degree in September 2019. I was wondering if there's a particular academic degree should be completed by the time of application, by the time the project starts. This is going to vary greatly by award. For the most part, though, you really want to pull up the award description and see if it fits into your, if your profile fits into a particular award. And for someone with who's getting a master's degree, who's in process of getting a master's degree, I would really look at awards that are open to all levels, open to folks that are outside of academia, because you know, that might be a little bit of a stretch if you're completing a master's degree and you're applying for an award that requires you know, a terminal degree or a PhD, especially if you're sort of in progress of completing your master's degree. That's not to say there aren't awards that fit that profile, but you just want to make sure that you're applying to an award that does fit that profile.
We can also encourage you, if you're currently completing your first master's degree and don't have a wealth of teaching experience on top of the master's, to look into the Fulbright U.S. Student Program. The Fulbright U.S. Student Program is open to anyone who doesn't yet have a terminal degree. So we commonly have folks with just a master's degree who are working on PhD research or just have a master's degree and want to do some research abroad. So the Fulbright U.S. Student Program might be for you if you are just completing your master's degree.
Can we apply to conduct research at an institution with which we have an ongoing collaboration? Absolutely. However, keep in mind that your Fulbright grant, the proposal that you write should be tied to the time frame of your Fulbright grant. So you can contextualize the work that you've done with a particular institution, but you don't want to write a proposal that, so if you work with an institution for 2 years but you're applying for a three-month grant, your proposal should really focus on what you're going to do in those 3 months. You can contextualize, you know, the work you've done in the 2 years and what you hope to do in the future, but your grant proposal should be all about what you hope to do in those 3 months. I've taught undergraduate courses in the language required. Does that impact the language proficiency report? No, it doesn't. Generally, if you're a native speaker of a language, you only have to do the self-report, unless the award description says otherwise, but it's really helpful that you've taught in the language that may or may not be required in a particular country. What's a typical award amount? Does it include housing, et cetera? This will vary greatly by country, by award. Some awards will give different levels of support depending on your profile, whether you're a full professor or an associate professor or things of that nature. So you want to check into the financial information about the award. Are spouses ever awarded Fulbright scholarships? Would each one need to be applied independently? So yes, each award is only for one person. So your spouse in general can accompany you, and some countries do provide additional support for dependents. Others, dependents are welcome, but they don't provide additional support. But we wouldn't be able to say give a couple, you know, two Fulbright grants guaranteed. What I would do in your situation, if your spouse is also considering a Fulbright Scholar Award and you are, I would sort of both apply, and with the understanding that, you know, one could be the other one's dependent if for whatever reason you both don't get a Fulbright grant, but one of you does. Keep in mind, there's no way to guarantee that you would be successful. You and your spouse would be successful in applying to an award in the same country, in the same field, for example, or even different fields. So, you know, lightning would kind of have to strike twice. I want to not say that that's not possible, but I definitely want to manage expectations around that. Is a Doctor of Jurisprudence, a law degree, considered a terminal doctorate for these awards? Generally, yes. So the JD is generally fine unless otherwise stated. You mentioned the portfolio samples are invited for arts disciplines. Are you aware if these would be still photographs, video footage? That would depend on your project. If you're proposing a photography project, then we would expect to see a portfolio of stills. If you're proposing a video project, a film project, we would expect to see film samples as well. We have a few, we're a little bit over, but I want to stay and answer the remainder of or a few more questions. So thanks again, everyone, for joining us. For those of you that can't stay with us, you know, we will we really thank you and encourage you to reach out to us if you have questions. Again, our contact information, I'll pull that up, is westhem@iie.org. And I'll pull that up just so that you have it. So definitely feel free to reach out to us. But we're going to stay on for just a few more minutes to answer any remaining questions. If my application is requested, do I get an explanation why? The feedback is important so we can improve our application for the next round. So we don't tell you what the committees have said. We're not able to share that information. But if you are not admitted, if you're not granted a Fulbright grant, rather, we can definitely, you definitely touch base with us. We can give you general feedback and sort of general guidance on how to approach it for a different competition. For the Fulbright U.S. student program, what counts as a recent graduate? It's been 3 years since I graduated from undergrad. I'm not in graduate school right now. Well, for the Fulbright U.S. student program, as long as you don't have a doctoral degree and you do have a bachelor's degree, for the most part, you're eligible. This presentation about the U.S. scholar program is a different aspect of the Fulbright program. And generally, the equivalent of that question is, what is a postdoc? Generally, a postdoc is someone that's been conferred a doctoral degree within a few years. But again, for the U.S. student program, there's no you can apply at large. Do you want to talk quickly about that?
Sure. As Peter mentioned, anyone who doesn't have a PhD is eligible for the Fulbright U.S. student program. And we do mention recent graduates, but it's anyone who doesn't have that PhD yet. So whether you graduated last year or 10 years ago with a BA, or a master's degree, you can be eligible for the Fulbright U.S. student program. That competition is going to be launching in early April, and we'll have separate webinars for the Fulbright U.S. student program where we can give you more specific information about those opportunities.
I already have one more question. If I'm a U.S. citizen, can I apply for a Fulbright to stay in the U.S. at a host institution but travel to Canada multiple times a year for data collection? Do I affiliate with it and stay in a university in Canada? The answer to that is no. You're not able to do that. The one very unique award in the Western Hemisphere that allows you to physically live in the U.S. and make trips is the Border Award to Mexico. And that's a very particular award where you have to have a, this is an award where you do have to have an affiliation with a home institution in the United States, and it has to be based on one of the U.S. states that borders Mexico. And essentially, you're living over the border. You're living in the United States, but you're making periodic trips into a border state of Mexico where your host institution is located. But there's no equivalent program to Canada. There's really no other program like the border program that only is a feature to Mexico. So thanks, everyone. We have taken you on a trip of the Western Hemisphere. We've gone from Canada to Chile and back. There's a lot of information on our website, a lot of ways to stay in touch with us. We really encourage you, if you're interested in West Ham, to reach out to us. We have country-specific webinars. We have a webinar for Canada on April 12th. We have a webinar for Mexico on April 19th and a Brazil webinar on April 17th. All of those are from 2 to 3. If you can't make our webinars, we do archive them within a few days after they occur. Again, we want to thank you, everyone. Gracias, merci, obrigado, all of the ways to say thank you in all the different languages throughout the Western Hemisphere. And we hope to see applications from you very soon.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.